Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 825. This is your host, Danny. First of all, thank you for those that have been downloading your podcast from all over the world. And I know we're probably going to have a lot of new listeners because of the content that we have for this episode of GTR. But first, head over to GamertagRadio.com. Listen to our past episodes. We have over 825 episodes. Make sure to go back. We have a crazy, crazy amount of content. And check it out. Let us know what you think. Also, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. If you have Radio Public, that's another app too you definitely should check out. You can also find our podcast through there. All right, so this episode is going to be a big one. We were invited to get some hands-on with the Division 2 Dark Zone, strictly all about Dark Zone. So while we were there at the studio in North Carolina, I was there, you know, with Pete and Paris. We got to play the game a lot. We captured a lot of footage. Make sure to check out the video version of this interview that we're going to be posting now here in the podcast. So we interview two people here. This is Terry Spear. He is the creative director at Red Storm. And also Tony Sturzel, senior producer of The Division 2. We talked a lot, and I mean a lot, about Dark Zone. There's content here, this stuff here that you're going to listen to that you're not going to find anywhere else. Great, great conversation. And also, this is a 32-minute interview. I can't wait to play this. Please let us know. If you like this interview, make sure to share with your friends, other people that are really, really excited about The Division. Share this content to them and hope everybody likes it. So we're going to play the interview right now. Enjoy.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
My name is Terry Spear. I'm the creative director on The Division 2 here at Red Storm Entertainment.
And I'm Tony Sturzel, senior producer here at Red Storm on The Division.
All right, thank you, gentlemen, for taking some time to talk to us about The Division 2 and more specifically the PvP aspect of what we got to play yesterday. Now, let me just tell you, and I say this every time I talk to someone that has worked on The Division, was not a fan back in 2016 when I first played it. I felt it didn't have the in-game content that, because I play other games in this space, right? And I'm like, where's the end game? I don't see that. So didn't really play it at all until earlier this year. Once the 1.8 update came out, I jumped back in and I was like, oh man, I have been missing out. Me and this guy over here, you know, we just rolled through doing all the shield stuff, just everything in the game. And more specifically, our adventures in the Dark Zone is what we've been having. So as we're here today for this event and what you've been able to show with the Dark Zone, kind of start talking about what's changed, because now we have three different zones of the Dark Zone. So let's just go into that first.
I think that's, you hit the biggest one already. So it's three Dark Zones now. I mean, I know you guys heard this already, but we've added so many things to the Dark Zone loops, right? We're talking about the new Rogue State that focuses on PvE activities, right? That theft and the greed. We're talking about normalization to help even the playing field for players, so there's a little less intimidation to go try out the Dark Zone. The dynamic nature of the Dark Zone, in fact, has changed completely. You know, I would say the original Dark Zone was a little more hand-scripted, right? It's a lot more dynamic now, living and breathing. And it's gonna react to how players are playing it and where they're playing it, so what activities pop off. I mean, there's tons of stuff.
Yeah, every single feature got evolved in some way, right? So even things like landmarks in the later updates from the first game, we started adding waves to landmarks, and then we eventually added a clearing reward in the DZ North area. When we added that, we added a reward for clearing landmarks that went direct to inventory, and we found that players really enjoyed getting a little bit more direct to inventory loot in the Dark Zone. So now you get a lot more of that, and it helps make sure that players' time is not always at stake as they go around. So there's a little lower barrier to entry to going in. When in the original earlier days, you could risk losing a lot and therefore losing a lot of your time. In terms of an RPG, we want your time invested to matter for you, right? So you get more direct inventory loot as you're going along. And then when you see one of those contaminated bags or you manage to get some contaminated loot yourself, we don't even roll the stats on that gear until after you've extracted it so that we know that it's going to pertain to you and it's going to be better for you. And that way, whenever you see that yellow bag, you probably want it, right? Whether it's yours or somebody else's. So we can kind of guarantee that a little more instead of maybe you see somebody carrying something and you don't know whether it's something you want or not. Now we pretty much guarantee that.
And we can't even talk about the Dark Zone without mentioning what we're adding to the end game of the Dark Zone, which is, you know, the occupied Dark Zones, where when you hit end game, there's going to be a shift. And I can't go into more details than that, but no normalization. I mean, no rules. Best way to say it, no rules. So if you're looking for a little crazier experience, something that's a lot more intense than, you know, what we're doing for Division 2, then you've got the occupied Dark Zones.
Yeah, one of the three zones will be occupied.
Yeah.
Now, and maybe you can't answer this because this has just been my question ever since, you know, you talked about that yesterday. Yeah. The incentive to go into that space, is it going to be loot driven or is it going to be something else that we could expect?
I think there's a number of reasons players want to go in there. I think first and foremost, we're presenting the challenge to the players of this particular profile type. It's going to be very hard. All aspects of this Dark Zone will be hard. So we're talking about the PvE element and, of course, the PvP element. Mm-hmm. The risk is increased, and so the reward is also increased. So it's about as much as I can cover on that topic, but the incentive is absolutely there. From a personal, you know, like, I want to brag, I want to flex, to I need to get some shit done, you know. Sorry if I said a bad word.
See, one of the things I like about the game yesterday when I was playing it is the introduction of that. So I know there's three. Is it like the introduction from each one of them? Because the first one we played, it was more like things you do in the game and so on. So what are we going to see for the other zones? Like, if you could talk about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the introduction missions, the intro missions are generally the beginnings of the player's uncovering of the mystery of that particular Dark Zone's narrative. And so they're all different and they all pertain to the story that created that initial Dark Zone in the first place. So they unlock as you progress through the 1 to 30 campaign, you gain access to go complete that intro mission, and you can do it at your own pace once you have the ability, once it's on your map and you can actually go do it. It's up to you to decide you want to do that. But it will tell you more about that particular zone. And they're all very different because of that. So they have very different stories, different biomes, and they happened at different times in the chronology since Black Friday. So that's where players are going in to basically unlock it for all other agents. So the mythos is that you are the first person to ever go into each of them. And once you finish that intro mission, you've made it accessible for all of the rest of it.
I think it's important to note also that we're taking the time to very lightly tutorialize some of the actions that occur in the Dark Zone, right? Mm-hmm. So if you've never been in because, you know, you didn't participate or whatever the reason, we're going to show you how to extract. We're going to show you what it means to get a piece of contaminated gear. We're going to show you how that's visualized. We're going to show you
how safe rooms work.
Exactly. So we're taking the time to step through some of the most important actions of the Dark Zone so players are comfortable once other players are present.
Yeah, that was the problem that I had with the last game was when I first started, I felt like it was so much going on, so much things to do, that I didn't know where to start. So by you guys doing that, the introduction is, I think it's going to be great for a lot of people that are going to play for the first time. Awesome. And they're not going to get the same feeling that I had back then. You know, so. Cool.
One thing to point out that I think we can say also is that, I'm looking at Stone, is that you can complete those intro missions without needing the Xbox Gold or the, you know, the premium tier of multiplayer.
Oh, wow. That's good.
Because they're group phase only. You can do them on your own without needing that extra tier of unlock. So that way we get everyone to experience the content.
It's actually an enticement for them to maybe say, oh, this is what I want to do.
We now.
I want to
so.
Do more
yeah.
than that, hopefully.
Yeah.
One of, and speaking in the Dark Zone, because I want to stay there for a second,
Yeah, Logan in a second.
So when you talk about the Dark Zone, obviously we talk Rogue.
Yeah.
Right. That's one of the fun things, one of the most fun experiences for me personally. I've been, you know, I've been deeply invested in the division since day one. So I was happy when Paris finally came on board. Over the last couple of months, you know, we've been playing on PC, including our good friend over there. There's been a couple of moments where we've either gone rogue or someone has gone rogue on us. You guys mentioned a new, you know, a reworked rogue system. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. You know, the PvE aspect of the first stages of the rogue system, right? Make sure it's not just about PvP. I think what we've done is we've really focused on all the stuff we've learned from the original game. How players react to timers. Do they like to run them down? Do they like to run away? We've made improvements to how manhunt is, you know, how players can approach the manhunt clearing, how opponents of the manhunts, how they can approach, you know, finding them and the rewards. You know, that the whole process was massaged. I mean, we really haven't changed a whole lot from the original game if you've, you know, been paying attention. The rogue toggle is still there. Now you can toggle rogue without toggling rogue, right? It's the actions in the world that do it. So it's a refinement, an evolution of the system.
Yeah, we've added a lot of PvE depth with basically any action that you can do as a shade agent, be it unlocking chests or gathering a Dark Zone drop. We can, as a player, you have this constant choice, this little angel and devil moment. Every time you do a normal action, you have the opportunity to decide, do I want a little bit more? Do I want to go and take all of this for myself? Right. And if you do those things, you become rogue. You flag yourself as available to be engaged. But the signs and feedback are still fairly discreet. So we don't ping you on the map at that point. If you're just in those early stages of rogue, you can still kind of stay in the shadows. But if another player sees you and they pick up on the fact that you're stealing, they have the option to engage you. So the threat and the tension is still there. But when you combine that with the fact that there's a lot more signs and feedback in the map now, so you can see where other players are a little bit easier. You can tell when landmarks are being engaged. You can tell when supply drops are being engaged. As a player who's trying to engage in those early stages of Rogue and doing the PvE stuff, you can kind of move around and try to avoid where other players are if you're savvy enough. So, you know, it's all, there's a little bit of nuance in there that helps kind of dictate how players are going to engage in their night, but that creates a lot of variety as well.
See, while they were playing the PC version, I'm by myself playing the Xbox version, yeah, right? So, there's going to be people like that probably don't have a lot of friends online. How's it going to be the process for them once they go to the...
I think you can totally play the Dark Zone solo. I mean, we have landmark difficulty indicated on the map now. So if you're solo, you probably don't want to go straight for the hard or challenging landmarks, right? But we have normal difficulty for you. And those should be clearable by a solo player as long as they're generally, you know, keeping their wits about them. And like I said, with all the signs and feedback, it's generally pretty easy to kind of identify where the hot areas are on the map at any given time. And so you don't see individual players per se, but you can tell, okay, there's probably a group up here. This landmark is red. This extraction's going off right now. So as a solo player, if you're not really interested or you don't think you'd be able to survive a big multi-person engagement, you can generally try to avoid those things and still have a fun night in the Dark Zone by yourself.
Layer on normalization, and you've got a chance at whatever comes your way, right? Because The focus is fair play and making sure that it's about skill. You know, if you get outgunned, you get outgunned. You know, if someone knows the landmark better than you and they flank you, okay, well, they got you, but communication, the normalization, and the fairness is going to be there.
And then, like we said earlier, the other big thing is the direct-to-inventory loot, right? So you are going to get good gear in the Dark Zone, whether it's contaminated or not, just from your regular progression as you're playing through. And so as a solo player, that was one of the big barriers to entry last time, is if I go in and get some loot, and then somebody comes up on me, and it's a group of two or three or four players, and I can't hold my own, then I've just lost all the time I invested in farming. This time around, you will have still maintained any of the gear that you managed to gather while you were moving around. And yeah, maybe you lose an item that you had if you were contaminated, carrying something contaminated and a group rolls up on you, but you didn't lose your entire time investment of that night, right? So the barrier to entry is a little bit lower for solo players.
Yeah, firing a flare for an extraction is like ringing a dinner bell.
Oh, yeah.
And now you don't have to always ring that dinner bell. Yeah. You know, it's still, it's still going to be there. And now it's even more important because of how we've changed contaminated gear. But you can just be cool and still have time.
Yeah.
All right, a couple things. I want to talk about density.
Oh, snap.
How many...
The video game?
Yeah, the video game. No, on that notion, how many people can we expect in a dark zone at any one time when we're playing?
Yeah. We took a long, hard look at the spaces of the original game, right? And, you know, the vast expanse that was the dark zone. We took a look at the player count we had before. All the things. We talked about player performance, you know, the usage of the space, what we decided to do with the three dark zones, what we wanted to tell with the narratives. It made a lot of sense for us to go down to 12 players. Right? You felt it. You played it, right? I think it fits really well with the kind of engagements we want, and it'll, quite frankly, play a lot better from a performance standpoint. So it's 12.
Staying along those lines, because I can hear people asking this already, since it is 12 people, let's say I go in my team of four. There's another team of three that's in there. Are you going to, as say solo players are trying to go into the dark zone, or is the game going to be smart enough to basically fill that out to still get to that 12 max?
Yeah, there is a little bit of that happening behind the scenes that we try to put solo players in with other solo players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really pulling back the curtain, the way that assignment into the dark zone works is as you get close, we start putting you into the server, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the first game, that was a solid border all the way around the dark zone. And it actually could create situations where the dark zone that you were in wasn't entirely full because players were not ever going to come in, but they were just close by and we had put them in a spot, right? So this time around, we've reined that in. You see those outer gates. We start putting you into a dark zone as you come through that outer gate or as you get close to one of the other checkpoints around the edges. And that enables us to have a little bit of time to look for a dark zone that fits the player profile of your group. So if you are, we don't necessarily do any kind of skill-based matchmaking or anything, but we do attempt to put solo players in with solo players and things like that.
Okay. And to follow along those lines, since we're talking about matchmaking and just things that are happening on the server side, one of the things that you mentioned in your presentation is you've changed the client-server architecture. So more things are happening at the server level than they are at the client level. Kind of talk. I come from information security, so this is big for me. But kind of talk about that. Why the change in architecture, just in infrastructure with the division, and how it's going to migrate into the division too?
Sure. Oh, go ahead, man.
Yeah, it's mutually beneficial. It's mutually beneficial, right?
Yeah.
And so we've spent a lot more time on asking the server to validate player positions and engagements and things like that. So. There's a lot more that happens that is sort of authenticated through the loop with the server this time around. And so the gameplay-wise, you don't really feel it. You know, the client is still driving a lot of everything that you're doing, and you're just telling the server, and the server is approving that and making sure everyone is on the same page, right? And so we have done a lot more to the overall online experience, like Terry talked about in the presentation. We've added a lot more data centers over the world. And we've also improved the way that servers scale. So we can use, additional servers can come online as needed to prevent long queues and things like that. And we do even go so far as to give you the option, if your server and your kind of most reliable data center is full, we give you the option of whether you want to wait in a queue or move to the next one. So that way, as a player, you have the choice of what is the priority for you. If you absolutely want to make sure you have the best connection to that data center, you can wait in the queue. But if you don't, you get a prompt and you can decide, okay, I just want to get in, and it's fine. And it'll resolve itself eventually.
And that's happening on console as well?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Impressive.
Yeah.
So let's talk about clans, because I'm a big fan of that feature. Let's say we have a big community. Some of them have like their favorite platform, favorite consoles or PC. Do we have to, when we create a clan, do we have to separate our clans, or is it going to be a feature where we're all together, doesn't matter what type of platform they have, and everything that we do in the game, we'll all get it within the one big group?
Are you talking about cross-platform kind of
cross-platform
stuff?
Cross-platform type, yeah, for clans.
Okay, specifically, I don't have an answer for cross-platform.
Okay.
Yeah, man. I believe we'll defer to Stone on that one.
Yeah.
Continue? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, what we can say about clans right now, and Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just touching briefly on it. I know we'll unleash more about clans in the coming months for sure, but we're talking about 50 unique players in a clan, and each one of those players can have four characters in the same clan. So we're talking about up to 200 different characters that are able to participate in all the stuff we talked about with the clan chat and the clan objectives. And when you start earning XP, it's all going to pile in on all those characters. So yeah. Let's say you have a main that you like to play, but you don't feel like playing the main tonight. Don't worry, you can play your alt and it's still going to contribute to the clan XP.
Yep. All
right, cool.
Earlier on, and you've mentioned it several times, normalization. What does normalization mean for those that may not know what you're talking about? And also, why is it so important to the Division 2?
Well, it's something that we picked up on in the original game. The Dark Zone from the original game was, you know, lawless. There was no normalization whatsoever. And it made it a little frustrating, I think, for some players that were looking for pure PvP and, you know, PvP that was level, like that level playing field, that fair opportunity to show skill. So in some of the summer updates, we introduced Skirmish back then, and it was normalized. We got a really positive response because players felt like, okay, cool, right? I haven't optimized my gear, but I can still step in the ring and participate. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to move forward with that. When we say normalized, right, it's maybe the most simple way I could say it is, you know, because we're an RPG and we have rarity tiers, you know, and you're going to get the orange M4, you know, the legendary M4, and I don't play that much. I've got a piece of junk, you know, but the damage output is going to be, I'm not going to say made the same, but we're going to rein it in. So kill times and things like that are going to feel very similar. So, and you can just jump right into a character. I don't know if we've talked about when you can play PvP, but it's something you can do very early on. You don't have to wait till your max level or anything like that. So you can jump in and not be so concerned that you haven't had time to grind any gear. You know, so it just means fair. I think that's the simplest way I can explain it.
Yeah. Yeah, we rely on skill-based matchmaking and your performance to really dictate where you get match made in as you're playing PvP. So that's the thing that helps differentiate who's playing against who. And overall, within any one of those sort of bands of player strata, the skill comes in as the major differentiating factor. And player gear is going to be brought into a kind of relative difference from everybody else that's in there with you, so that you're able to compete night in and night out with people who might have three or four times the amount of time in the game that you do.
So once you go into the lawless dark zone, that means all of your perks matter,
we don't change a single stat.
Nope.
Nothing.
Yeah, we don't touch it.
That's when it gets hectic.
And Terry mentioned it earlier too, and this is something that's important to us, is because we added the normalization in the first game towards the end of the post-launch or the end of last year in post-launch. And we didn't really clearly show you what we were doing. We explained it on stream a few times, and we kind of told the community who was paying close attention. But this time around, we have a button press toggle to view the normalized stats inside the game. So when you view your inventory, you can see exactly what we're doing. And we're not trying to turn on and off talents and things like that with normalization. What you come in with, and we're respecting your RPG choices, right? But we are able to show you right from the character sheet what exactly we've done to your build, so that you know, and you can still min-max even within those parameters.
Yeah, that's a detail that hasn't really made its way out yet, is that, you know, we're normalizing to a, let's just say, a specific strata or band. And if you have gone beyond that, you're going to receive a little extra benefit for your time put in. But it's not going to be monumentous, but you spent the time, you'll have a little advantage to feel, right? So it's not a clamp, and if you've gone beyond that strata, you'll earn rewards for that.
Okay, so let's switch gears. You know, we played Skirmish yesterday. We also played another game mode. Can we talk about a little bit more about that?
Sure. Domination.
Yes.
Yeah, what would you like to know?
Why?
Oh.
Why domination as a game type? Why not maybe bring in other game types?
Yeah, I think it was a great start. I mean, Tony and I, it might have been a selfish choice. I don't know. I love Dom. And it's a game mode that everyone seems to know. It's, permeated this, you know, the gaming scene for 100 billion decades or however long we've been around. And we're looking for accessibility and something for everyone. You've heard that. And domination was one of those choices where, oh, yeah, dude, we don't have to worry about really teaching players. Of course, there's going to be players that have never done it. We recognize that. So science and feedback are going to be there to show players how to play. But TDM and Dom, right, it's a really nice choice for players to get their feet into conflict.
Yeah, and it's a great start into objective-based gameplay, right? Yeah. That, you know, working with your team, having some strategy, there's a lot of depth there in terms of when you decide to go for the farther objective and all of those kind of things that players who want to stay coordinated and work well together can have some really intricate strategies in the maps. You know, that's one of the things we talked about too, is being able to build custom maps just for PvP is something we've never been able to do. We had PvP in Last Stand, and we used the Dark Zone for that. And then we had the Skirmish when we released it in Update 1.8 last year. We had the maps were also used for Resistance. So we've always had this sort of multi-purpose nature to the spaces that we've made. And inevitably, you're going to end up with some sacrifices or needing to, you know, serve two masters. This time around, making sure that we have dedicated PvP maps that we built entirely before they were arted and iterated on them a lot when they were just what we call gray box, like literally just blocks. It really helped us hone in on sight lines and all those sorts of things and make sure that we still get you to locations that really exist. Like that Capital Ruins map is crazy, but that's a real place. And if you look it up, it's out there in the woods. They took all of these remnants when they renovated some of the buildings in the city and just dumped them in the woods. And so we get to take you to places that you wouldn't otherwise get to in the game, which is really cool for us as well, letting you kind of explore some other locations.
One more thing on PvP, because I just want to make sure that it's clarified. So PvP will have its own progression track.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, you have your own.
And what's the reason for that versus building it into whatever the Dark Zone's doing or what you're doing with PvE?
Well, I love to fill bars. As a gamer, when I do a specific thing, I'd like to be rewarded for that specific thing. And we don't consider Dark Zone to be the same as organized PvP because, you know, conflict is about, it's truly about playing against other players. We identify that the Dark Zone is also about PvE. In fact, when you look at how we present it, it's always PvE VP because you're always going to find PvE. And you might not find PvP unless you really go hunting for it. So combining those progression tracks didn't really resonate with us because, all right, cool, you can go do your thing and you're going to earn rewards. Play PvP. We want people to know that you play PvP and going to get those rewards.
Yeah, and I think it stays in the something for everyone sort of umbrella, right? Where we know that some players are not really as interested in PvP, and we don't want the game to be trying to force them sort of arbitrarily to go, you know, dive into that experience if that's not what they're coming to the Division 2 for. So it's there for them, and we hope that they come check it out. And, you know, frankly, you could go in and level up enough to where you can play PvP and then stay in there for a few months before you ever go back, right? If you want to play with that gear that you came in with the first time and not any gear that you get through the progression, then that's up to you, you know? So players play our game in a lot of different ways, and that's something we absolutely learned over the course of a few years of post-launch and watching data and analytics and talking with the community. So we want to make sure that we're catering to all those different types of players and play styles.
Okay, so I want to go this direction, and I like to talk. I'm a long-winded guy, so just bear with me just a second. So first and foremost, I'll stick with just being in the Dark Zone. The environment, the level design just is incredible. It really is. I found myself many times just going, wow, that's the Capitol building in the background. But this really is Washington, D.C., and, you know, in this whole post-apocalyptic world or whatever you want to call it with the virus and everything. But that feeling of being in the Dark Zone and knowing that, yeah, this really is a real place that I could drive to today if I wanted to and it exists in the world. Great. Mm. But I want to go into the story aspect. So three of us were playing with someone else, and as we started getting better in the Dark Zone, we got set up at one of the landmarks where we went to a landmark and we're like, wait, they're gone. And we took out all the NPCs and we're starting to loot and we kind of relax. They set us up. They were hiding down below, man. And they came out and they just took us out. So we're like, all right, lesson one. Now we know. So as we started to progress through, our whole cadence through the game was we're going to go rogue. We're going to go manhunt. Mm. And we're basically we'd see someone either trying to extract or they're engaged in a landmark. And we just beeline for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say it was griefing, but we were taking advantage of a situation the entire time, to the point that, you know, in the play session where everyone had their code names. Who's this whiskey? Who's this? You know, it's like we're constantly hearing that. And that was that fun factor of being in the dark zone. Like, see, that's the secret sauce of what they're going to be able to do with this game, that we were able just in this session to be able to kind of have that fun. But you've talked a lot about normalization. You talked a lot about having everyone being able to play. Mm. And what I've found in being playing these type of games over the past few years is that balance. You might have a hardcore person like myself or Peter, but then you might have a more casual person like Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Like the conversations that you guys are having to try and find that perfect mix, because there may or may not be some other games that are trying to do it and they're failing at it. So I'm sure that has to be a big concern for you as you go into the launch for the Division 2. How do we keep the hardcore people happy so they feel like they're getting everything they want? But how do we not also over intimidate the casual person that's throwing their hands up going, yes, Stone, we're wrapping up, that I don't know what to do. What, you know, I feel intimidated. I don't want to play this game because it's too much.
Yeah. The Dark Zone. I love the Dark Zone because it's all about the story you generate. Like you said, you just told us a story about a cool moment that you had, and maybe the next night you went and you had a totally different experience. And so we've put those things in place, those things that we believe solo players and players that are maybe less hardcore, if you want to use that term, we've put things in place to help them experience the Dark Zone. And might not work. Like, if I'm just being real with other gamers, right? Some nights you will get stomped and it will be intimidating. But we're hoping that the hooks and the gameplay loops that we have in the Dark Zone are tantalizing enough that you get stomped. Maybe you don't go back for two nights, but that third night you go, yo, I need to extract some gear. I'm feeling it. Let's go. Maybe you squad up. Maybe you call up a friend. Maybe you don't have any friends. So maybe you find someone on proximity VoIP and you see someone else doing a landmark, you make a friend. So we're hoping that all of those loops shine because there's something for everyone.
Like, yeah, I think there's some system nuance there that helps protect against some of the things that you're talking about. Like we haven't really talked too much about it over the couple of days, but we have passive perks that unlock in the Dark Zone rank, Dark Zone level, progression that you unlock as a player and you make some choices. And if you rank down or level down, those go back away. So as a player, you're not necessarily incentivized to just go manhunt. If you don't survive that manhunt, you're probably going to level down. I saw it happen yesterday. A group went double notoriety manhunt. They were on their third time of clearing their station and they ran in front of a gate and the turrets killed two of them. And the other two guys finished clearing their manhunt and they got a bunch of gear for having this triple manhunt clear. And the other two that died, DZ leveled down because that could turn some of their perks off. And now they've got some work to do. So you have to remember too, the mentality of, I've been playing with this character for a long time, right? I've built up my Dark Zone level. In the first game, Dark Zone rank, as you reached higher and higher levels, stopped having quite as much of a draw for you to keep going apart from just reaching that 99. Because vendor stock, I think we stopped really incentivizing it around 75, right? This time around with those ranks and or the levels and the perks unlocking and relocking, there are some system safeguards in place to make sure that your knight isn't just going to always be incentivized to be taking away from other players. And if that's what you're looking for, you'll probably find yourself heading to the occupied Dark Zone a lot more than going to the other ones, right? So we hope that all of those systems work themselves out. But, you know, that's why we need people in the betas, and that's why we need people's feedback all along the way. It's going to be an ongoing conversation just like it was the first time.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, gentlemen, thank you for your time. We really appreciate the time explaining about the Dark Zone and PvP with the Division 2, and I'm really looking forward to March.
Cheers, y'all. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very
much. Thanks for staying, and we look forward to hearing what you think of it.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so that was the interview with the senior producer and also creative director of the Division 2 Dark Zone. So it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And I know a lot of people were wondering, hey, where is the hands-on impressions? Stay tuned. The next episode of GTR, we're going to talk about all of that. So make sure to send your questions right now because we want the listeners to also be involved. You have questions about Dark Zone, all that stuff, send it to us, fanmail@gamertagradio.com, or you could give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Want to make it a little bit easier for you guys? If you're out of town, out of the country, and you don't have access to call us, but you could also leave us a voice message digitally. Go to speakpipe.com. That's speakpipe.com/gamertagradio. You could also send us questions through there. Record it from your mobile device, tablet, or your computer, and we definitely will play it on the next episode of Gamertag Radio. So that's it for now. We'll be back here the next episode coming out Monday. We're going to have a lot of content for that episode. And we're going to talk about our impressions about the Division 2. Thank you for listening. Until next time. Peace. I'm out.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.